It's 6 past 12 o'clock and 79 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Monday, June 17th. Coming up this hour, now the wildfires some miles from Santa Fe seem to be dissipating, we'll take a look at a closer, very dry site for a potential blaze, the lower Santa Fe watershed. Some recent rain doesn't mean the drought is over just yet. We'll get some tips for how to conserve even more of it. And a look at immigration reform as viewed by the U.S. House of Representatives in a panel hearing this morning. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagan, and more after headlines.
The Horoso fire, burning some 20 miles northeast of Santa Fe, is uncontained at 3,500 acres in extremely rugged terrain. The area is largely inaccessible to ground crews. Potential for growth is considered high, as there are large areas of long dead and down trees throughout the region. As of today, the Atlanta National Incident Management Organization has assumed command of operations with some 60 personnel and two helicopters deployed to devise a containment strategy. Meanwhile, good progress has been made at the 24,000-acre Thompson Ridge fire in the Jemez, with containment at 80%. The Tres Lagunas fire near Pecos is now 90% contained. The U.S. Supreme Court has today said that our neighboring state of Arizona cannot require voters to prove U.S. citizenship before registering to vote. Challengers of the law had argued that it placed an undue burden on naturalized citizens, as their documentation cannot, by law, be photocopied. That meant they could only register in person and not by mail. In a 7-2 ruling, the justices said that the state cannot set a stricter standard than the federal government's request to avow under oath and penalty of perjury that the registrant is a U.S. citizen. Nearly all of the oil and gas wells up for safety inspections last year failed to pass their tests. That's according to the Albuquerque Journal, which says that state officials put inspections on hold because of a shortage of manpower. But when the inspections were conducted, 85% of nearly 300 wells being looked at failed to pass. At tonight's meeting of Santa Fe's Finance Committee, they'll consider having the city terminate its contract with the nationwide insurance company, Service Line Warranties of America. The contract had allowed use of city letterhead to offer residents limited liability coverage in the event of a water or sewer line failure between their homes and city pipes. City Councilor Patty Boucher was among those finding city endorsement of a single business concern troubling. Phil Riley is CEO of Service Line Warranties and says his company is the only one endorsed by the National League of Cities.
We started working with the National League of Cities, and as they learned more about not only the product that we offered, but our results, they decided they wanted to adopt the program. And then based upon that, they came in and did their own due diligence on us and determined based upon those factors that we were a company that they wanted to be associated with.
The Whole Foods supermarket chain has changed its alleged English-only language policy in the face of strong criticism from citizens' rights advocates and threat of public boycott. Two employees of an Albuquerque branch were put on temporary suspension recently for speaking Spanish to each other while on the job. ACLU New Mexico pointed out there was no such policy in place for employees who are native speakers of other languages. Whole Foods has apologized for the incident and has revised what it says was a poorly worded section of worker code of conduct. Virgin Galactic's space tourism flights out of New Mexico's spaceport, scheduled to begin early to mid-2014, has added its 600th future astronaut to the list of folks paying $250,000 each for the experience. She's Marcia Waters, a 42-year-old owner of an accounting firm based in the UK. A Virgin spokesperson told KSFR News today that women comprise about 15% of all those holding Spaceport America reservations thus far. The Santa Fe Police Department has just welcomed four new officers into its ranks. They are among 57 cadets graduating from a 22-week training program at the New Mexico Law Enforcement Academy. With the new hires, the Santa Fe Police Department now has just five vacancies. Santa Fe Public Schools has been fielding names for its new K-8 facility on Herrera Drive. 18 different names have been whittled down to a favorite recommendation, the Nina Otero Community School. Adelina Nina Otero, born in 1881, was a woman suffragist, educator, and community activist here in Santa Fe. The naming committee will make formal presentation of their choice at tomorrow night's Board of Education meeting. The Democratic Party of New Mexico hosts a forum in Santa Fe this week on creating open primaries in New Mexico, like those in 20 other states. Currently, only registered party members can select nominees, with independent voters and those undeclared shut out of the process. Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico, former State Democratic Party Chairman Javier Gonzalez, and Representative Brian Egoff of Santa Fe will be exploring the political and legal issues of allowing all voters to participate. The forum is scheduled for Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Progress and Justice on Cerrillos Road. The Silver Fire, burning downstate near Silver City, has potential to grow larger than its current 23,000 acres. Containment is at just 5% as it blazes, and some residents of the historic mining town of Kingston remain under an evacuation order. Weekend humidity helps suppress growth, but drier, warmer weather arriving by midweek may hinder the firefighting efforts of the more than 600 personnel currently assigned. And weather for Santa Fe, a 10 to 20% chance for isolated showers both today and Tuesday under mostly sunny skies. Look for daytime highs in the mid-80s with overnight lows near 60. For KSFR News, this is Dan Garrity.
Stocks are up across the board on Wall Street. The S&P 500 firmly above the 1600 point. NASDAQ is up a full percentage point. Dow Jones about the same percentage amount. That's equal to 141 points. The Dow stands at 15,211. 12:13 on at noon from KSFR News. Those wildfires on the edges of the Santa Fe area have been scary. With any change in wind, the Tres Lagunas fire might have headed this way. The Thompson Ridge fire might have approached Los Alamos. The Herrera fire could still move north and east toward populated areas. Locally, an area that could erupt is the lower Santa Fe watershed. It's thick and bone dry. Santa Fe has funded a team of 10 urban wildfire fighters to make advanced preparations. They're back now after taking part in the Tres Lagunas defenses. And I asked Porfirio Chavarria, their leader, what work they've been doing in the watershed.
When we're not on wildland fire, we've been doing thinning projects, and one of the projects that we've been doing is a small piece in the watershed. Now, as maybe your listeners may know, that the watershed has spent somewhere over $7 million in federal money to thin the watershed over the last, 13 years or so, thinning out, I believe, close to 6,000 acres and affecting the lower portion of the watershed that's not in the wilderness area, and then continuing to burn that area. In fact, with the help of the Watershed Association and the Forest Service and the Nature Conservancy, we were able to get some funding in order to sustain that continued burning in the watershed over the next 20 years at least.
So more thinning, more burning.
Correct, correct. So, you know, this is a ponderosa pine ecosystem up there, which on average, and I think we did the studies to figure out exactly how many years, but it was around, you know, 7 to 10 years of fire that was in there pre-European settlement, that, you know, you would just have a fire every 7 to 10 years or so. Low intensity that would burn out all the underbrush and then allow the larger trees and stronger trees to grow big and strong and keep it, you know, really open stand compared to what it was before they did any of the thinning up there.
Now, that work you've been doing is in the area above the reservoirs, is it?
No, currently the work we are doing is a small 3-acre piece up there just below Nichols Reservoir, which is the lower reservoir.
And that that could catch and then rage further to the, I guess, to the east.
Correct. So, you know, that would be kind of at the mouth of the watershed there, you know, depending on your perception. But, you know, it is definitely at the bottom. So if you get something started at the bottom, it's, you know, fire likes to travel uphill, upslope, which would be right into the main reservoir and into the Pecos Wilderness, which is at the upper part of the reservoir.
Well, that raises a question because further below that area is the Santa Fe River, you know, and residential area and so forth. Any work being done down there?
Correct. As far as right below the river along, I guess that would be Upper Canyon Road, we have done some work in there as far as removing a lot of the dead and down. There's a lot of riparian vegetation there, you know, vegetation that likes to live right next to the water source. And so we don't want to do a whole lot of thinning in there just because we want to preserve that type of vegetation in there. And it's kind of a, you know, it takes some really thoughtful planning in there, what exactly has to happen, and consultation with the neighbors in that area as far as what we're doing. But currently we're just kind of removing all the dead and down out of there. At least, you know, that would minimize what could get started, especially since we are, you know, the city is sending some water through there.
But that area is potentially a big fire danger, isn't it?
Yeah, there's definitely some potential there, that's for sure.
Now, when the city is beginning work on the reservoirs and will be closing, and also some new sewer and water lines on Cerro Gordo, mm-hmm. it'll be closing Cerro Gordo for some time. When does that begin, and is the timing for that good in the middle of wildfire season?
Gosh, you know, I've been away on fires, so I don't know. I don't know when that is going to happen, and so, you know, depending on when that happens, it may cause some kinks. I don't know exactly when they have that scheduled.
Well, you and your crew are keeping an eye on things, Porfirio Chavarria. Many thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
Santa Feans have done a very good job of conserving water over the years. In fact, the latest report says Santa Fe beats out every other municipality for saving water. But there's more probably that we can do. Joe Savage from the State Environment Department is on the line. Joe Savage, you keep an eye on how much water the state has and how safe it is. It's worth doing, isn't it?
Oh, we certainly should, especially now. This is a year where it is very, very important and crucial for all of us.
Now, you're talking about drinking water, well water, municipal water supplies?
All of the above, you bet. Yeah, municipal water supplies, even from your own well, because a lot of wells, the water is going down in the aquifers, so it applies to pretty much everybody in New Mexico.
Well, aside from taking shorter showers, what else, what do you recommend?
Well, you know, I think that the biggest water waste in many homes and businesses are leaks. Even if it's just a drip in a faucet, or if you hear your toilet running all the time, and it could lead up to 90 gallons per day, and that's quite a bit of water.
That's a lot of water. If you're on a municipal system, that'll add to your bill.
Oh my goodness, yes, it certainly will. And it depletes our supplies, and we get no use out of that leak.
But what else is there to do?
Well, some things are fairly straightforward, like when you take a shower, you want to make it very short, because even a two-minute shower could be over 10 gallons of water, unless you have a low-volume shower head.
And
something else that people don't consider is they turn on the water to the hot water and they wait for it to get hot. And in my house, that could be a couple gallons or more. And so if we were to take that, waiting for it to get hot, and put it in like a dish tub and use that water for rinsing or something like that, then that'll conserve water as well.
Take it out, throw it on the vegetables. Actually, vegetables don't mind soapy water, do they?
No, they really don't. Or old coffee, instead of throwing the coffee down the drain, you could put it on your plants, and that really helps. And something else, too, if you go to replace a toilet, it's important to get a low-volume toilet, because the average toilet flushes more than 5 gallons, five or more gallons.
And the new ones are what, a gallon?
A gallon to a gallon and a half. Mm-hmm. And so if you're building a new home, ask for those. That will help quite a bit, because flushing amounts to quite a bit of water. And also laundry. There are new washers that offer water-saving features. So if you're getting a new washing machine, that's something to look for.
Mm-hmm.
and combining loads, because the average load is about 40 gallons of water. So if you could combine loads and use the minimum amount of water in that load. So if it's just a few things, you can't combine it all or whatever, you know, don't fill the whole washing machine up with water.
It's an expensive proposition, but some folks are actually diverting their water drainage from the washing machine outside.
Oh, you know, that's a good idea, too, because it's gray water. It's not considered the black water, so it's not all that hazardous. And if you could irrigate with it, that's a great idea.
That's an expensive proposition, isn't it?
You know, I think to retrofit it in a home, it does cost some money. But if you're building a new home, you could just ask the builders and contractors and architects to just put that right in the plans.
Now, Joe Savage, we've had some communities experiencing water problems, and you've issued boil water advisories. These are what, community systems that have gone bad for some reason?
Yes, and it's precautionary boil water advisories. We had El Dorado recently that had a major water leak, so it wasn't really a source problem, but a leak. And when there are major leaks and the pressure goes down, then there's a possibility of contamination entering that water system. So it's a precautionary water advisory. And, of course, Magdalena has hit the news in the last couple weeks because it wasn't a leak. It was the fact that their aquifer is going dry. It's playing out.
Las Vegas is in the same bucket, aren't they?
Las Vegas could use more water resources as well. Yeah, so we're working with them very closely, too, to make sure that they don't run out of water.
Not a lot you can do about it in their case except to conserve.
Conserve. That is the key.
Now, these wildfires haven't helped either.
Yeah, there's the Tres Lagunas fire that was in the watershed above Las Vegas, and fortunately it didn't cross over too much into that watershed. But we're still concerned because if the watershed is harmed, then, of course, your water is going to be harmed. And then, too, after a burn scar, there's the possibility of flooding where it could wipe out some of the facilities. And that was more of a problem after Little Bear fire around Ruidoso than it will be for some of these fires unless they continue.
Joe Savage, any other tips for us?
There is a good website. It's epa.gov WaterSense. And you could go there and get a lot more tips than I gave in this brief amount of time.
Well, it's worth keeping an eye on. Water's a precious thing. Joe Savage at the Environment Department, many thanks.
Hey, thank you.
12:23 on at noon from KSFR News. The G8 summit of government leaders has gotten underway in Northern Ireland. As it starts, the BBC's John Humphreys asks whether the G8 is still relevant.
Many people reckon that the G8 has had its day. What is the point of a summit meeting of world leaders if it includes Canada and Italy, but excludes China and India, for instance? In the case of the meeting that begins in Northern Ireland today, what is the point? Full stop. Overwhelmingly, the biggest issue is Syria, but the chances of agreement seem vanishingly slim. Let's talk to two of our people who are there. Mark Mardell, who flew in with the American Press Corps, the White House Press Corps, and he's our North America editor, of course, and Bridget Kendall, our diplomatic correspondent, and they're both there. Mark, is it going to be tricky between, obviously between Putin and Obama? Clearly that's going to be tricky. But what about the way that David Cameron gets on this particular issue on Syria with President Obama, because they do have a difference, don't they?
I think they really do. I heard William Hague earlier poo-poo your suggestion that President Obama is a bit half-hearted about this. I think there's no doubt that he's half-hearted. I'm in a Belfast hall where he's about to make a speech on conflict, on peace, on bringing resolution to conflicts, and it's the ideal opportunity to mention Syria, but he hasn't. Since the change of his policy, and he's ordered that change, it's absolutely true, so of course he backs the change in policy to give some military aid to the rebels, he's made speeches on the importance of fathers, the importance of basketball coaches, on gay and lesbian rights. He hasn't mentioned Syria at all. I think he feels very, very hesitant about this, and isn't quite sure what to do, whereas David Cameron is a real liberal interventionist. He wants the West to go in, but he's restrained by his backbenchers, if you like, whereas Obama is restrained by his principles.
And they're not exactly, Bridget, the only two players in the game.
Well, no, they're not. The French are also pretty keen to see something done to make sure that the opposition doesn't slide towards defeat. They've been, with the British also, pushing hard up till now on the idea that there needs to be something done that's more than non-lethal aid to the rebels. But I think the big elephant in the room, of course, is Mr. Putin on this. If you think about it, if there is a point of G8 summits now, you might say, well, this is still a very powerful club of rich nations. And if they are like-minded and share the same interests and values, if they come together and pool their influence and their resources, they can really make a difference. But what do we see this year? We see 7-1. In fact, if you think about it, going back, this is quite a different dynamic for G8. Last year, Mr. Putin didn't even turn up. Mm. And before that, for 4 years, they were dealing with the much milder President of Medvedev. And if you remember, at the French G8, it was at the G8 that Mr. Medvedev did a U-turn on Libya, the last conflict, and turned around and said, Gaddafi must go. Well, we know perfectly well that Vladimir Putin is not going to do anything like that here. Instead, you have former superpowers talking about whether they're confronting each other over a conflict in the Middle East where they might be arming opposite sides.
You wonder, I can put this to both of you if I may, whether they wouldn't do better staying at home and talking to each other bilaterally, just having a chat on the phone and trying to sort things out, rather than this incredibly high profile get together where the stakes are so high and they're trying to kind of appear to be the most powerful guy in the room to their different constituencies. It becomes it makes it more, surely, more difficult rather than less difficult, Mark.
I think there is some merit in everybody being in the same room. I mean, maybe I'm an optimist, but I think that whilst you can make agreements on a bilateral arrangement, I think there is something, rather than saying, well, I'd love to do that, but it's the other guy, you know, it's because of Putin we can't do anything, actually having them all in the room and saying, well, look, we've got a problem, what can we do about it? Looking each other in the eye may have some benefit. And I mean, in this particular case, what Obama and what presumably Cameron will be trying to say to Putin is that it's in your interest. Russia says it doesn't want to destabilize Syria. It doesn't want to descend into chaos. It doesn't want extremists taking over. And the administration, the White House administration's argument is, well, what you've got now is exactly that. And you've got to act to avoid it. So actually saying that to him may have a point.
A quick thought from you, Bridget, if I may, on that last point.
Well, I think we all know, don't we, that face-to-face meetings are completely different from emailing someone or talking to them on the phone. And when you get the dynamic of 8, actually it's 10 leaders because there are 2 leaders from the EU who now always come as well, you may get one of 2 things. Mr. Putin may be looking forward to having a piece of his mind with everyone around the table and hoping he can win them over, because I think he thinks he's got some quite good arguments on his side. He certainly sounded like that in Downing Street yesterday. Whereas the American president, the British and the French leaders may be thinking, if they get everyone lined up behind them, maybe they can do with Mr. Putin what they've done before with Mr. Medvedev, and make him realise if he wants to be part of this club, he's going to have to change shift his position. And, you know, that's not something you can do unless you're all together in the same route. Whether they'll get anywhere, that's another matter.
Quite so. Thanks both very much indeed, Mark and Bridget.
John Humphreys in London. If you had an extra 60 seconds, you might be obliged to give it to the old curmudgeon, just as we are.
I think that as a species, celebrating comes naturally to us. When something good happens to us, we want to share our happiness with others. Now, I'm not talking about those selfish, self-serving blowhards who aren't sharing their happiness, but rather broadcasting the results to gloat over those supposedly less fortunate. I'm talking about those who share their happiness because it makes others feel happy for them. Of course, there are a perverse few who get pleasure in not sharing their happiness, at least not right away. They get their kicks on the Route 66 of people wondering, for example, who won the lottery. Like the person in Zephyr Hills, Florida, who probably didn't want people to know she won the lottery by cutting in front of somebody in line. I once won the Great Mille Lacs Lake Ice Fishing Contest of 1932 and took home the pot of $12 and never told anybody about it until now. And that's no fishtail. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Higgs.